to the Alaska World Affairs Council Presents on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Kristen Spack. The Alaska World Affairs Council brings the world to Alaska. World leaders, journalists, authors, educators, and entrepreneurs join Alaskans in a conversation about world affairs. This week, the Dalai Lama's representative to the United States, Lobsang Yandak, speaks on the future prospects for Tibet. Lobsang Yandak became the representative of His Holiness the Dalai Lama to the United States on September 1, 2008. Previously, he served as a cabinet member of the Central Tibetan Administration, heading the Department of Information and International Relations, the Department of Finance, and the Department of Health. In 1996, Lobsang founded the Tibetan Center for Human Rights and Democracy, the first Tibetan non-governmental human rights organization to be established in exile in India. While working as executive director of the organization, Lobsang also served as a member of Tibetan Parliament in the late 1990s. On Friday, March 20th, he spoke at the Alaska World Affairs Council in Anchorage on the future prospects for Tibet. In partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council, KSKA presents the Dalai Lama's representative to the United States, Lobsang Yandak.
Best of luck to everybody. In fact, I'm very, very glad to be here before you. And in Alaska, I've even discovered a Tibetan, you know, sitting at the end of this table and who has similar name of mine, Lobsang. I'm really, very happy that Tibetans are, you know, scattered almost all over the United States. Probably many of you might not know when exactly Tibetans from Tibet and from India and Nepal started coming to the United States. It was in early 60s, soon after the Tibetans first came into exile in India, a very handful of Tibetans started migrating to the United States. And there were, I think, only a dozen of them. And then in 1990, the U.S. Congress passed an immigration bill supporting 1,000 Tibetan immigrant visas. And ever since then, 1990, the flow of Tibetan immigrants to the United States have increased tremendously. Now, we have around 10,000 Tibetans settled in different parts of the United States. Let me first of all thank the organizer, World Affairs Council, for giving me this opportunity to visit Alaska and also to present my views to the members of the council. And I also wanted to thank each and every one of you for your interest in Tibet. I always used to consider that your presence here is the expression of your solidarity and support to the Tibetan people and to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I'm just wondering, even though many of you are aware of the Tibet situation, many of you have already have some contacts with the Tibetan community, but let me very briefly, maybe in 2 minutes, give you a background information of the exiled Tibetan community. In 1959, when the communist occupying forces finally took total control over Tibet, His Holiness the Dalai Lama and some 80,000 Tibetans escaped to India and Nepal. And ever since then, we have established our homes basically in India, Nepal, and Bhutan. The first arriving Tibetan refugees, they have faced, including my parents, they have faced tremendous hardships because of the of being uprooted from their own home and family inside Tibet, because of the severe climatic conditions in Asia, and because also of the inadequate living conditions. And as a result, hundreds of Tibetans in early 1960s, they have simply died due to heat and other poor conditions. His Holiness the Dalai Lama soon after coming to exile established the Tibetan government in exile. And the primary goals of the Tibetan government in exile is to look after the welfare of the Tibetan refugees who are scattered in, particularly in India, Nepal, and Bhutan. And the second equally important objective is to regain the lost freedom of the Tibetan people from Chinese communist regime. And we have 7 major departments in Dharamsala. For instance, the Home Department, it looks after the welfare of the Tibetans refugees plus 55 Tibetan refugee settlements in India and Nepal. And we have Department of Health, which again looks after the health needs of the Tibetans. And we have Department of Education, which looks after the education of all the Tibetan refugees. We do not have a single Tibetan child who does not have the education opportunity in exile, even though our resources are extremely limited. We have been able to establish in the past 50 years plus 55 Tibetan schools. We have Tibetan health clinics in almost all the Tibetan settlements. We have religious institutions in all the Tibetan settlements and also outside the Tibetan communities. And we have Department of Religion, Department of Information International Relations, which looks after the international affairs of the Tibetan people. And we have Department of Finance. The budget of the Central Tibetan Administration is not much. It's only around $6 million a year. And almost half of this, the income is being generated from Tibetan refugees communities themselves. What we do is we contribute a voluntary tax every year to our own government so that our government can function without the external support. So all the recurring expenses of the Tibetan government in exile is being supported by the Tibetan people themselves. So with this very brief introduction on the Tibetans in exile, let me also share, before commencing to my topic, which is the future prospects of Tibet, the commitments of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. As every one of us know, that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is the undisputed leader, spiritual and political leader of the Tibetan people. But his role does not confine to the well-being of the Tibetan people. He has been relentlessly making efforts to promote and to serve the humanity. And His Holiness always put it that way, that his topmost priority is always the humanity. And he has three basic commitments in life. And one is the promotion of human values. As you know, His Holiness always gives the message of love, compassion, kindness, warm-heartedness, and these undoubtedly are the key factors of a happy human life, both at the individual level or at the community level. But however, in this modern world, we give insignificant attention to these inner values. And therefore, the result is that we have constant sufferings and unhappiness. And the second His Holiness commitment is the promotion of inter-religious harmony. His Holiness always tries to emphasize that all major religious traditions in this world conveys the same message of love, compassion, tolerance, self-discipline, contentment. And they all have the potential to bring about peace and happiness in this world. Yet, in this world, even though we recognize or we accept the plurality in politics and democracy, but we hesitate the plurality in religious traditions. So His Holiness has been making special efforts in terms of inter-religious harmony in the past several decades. And the third commitment, as I said, is the commitment to the well-being of the Tibetan people. He being the undisputed leader of Tibet, and also because the 6 million Tibetan people put in lots of faith and hopes on him, that he has to continue to shoulder the major responsibility in engaging with the Chinese leaders to see that the sufferings of the Tibetan peoples can be brought to an end one day. So his efforts, as many of you might be aware, has been very conciliatory, and however, it's been almost now 50 years, we have not been able to achieve any meaningful result from the efforts that we have been making for the last 50 years. And when I came to Alaska, I came to know that the Alaska is celebrating the 50th years of its statehood. And for Tibetan people, we are commemorating the 50th years of our National Uprising Day, the 50th years of China's occupation of Tibet, the 50 years of Tibetans being in exile. In the past 50 years, many things have changed in this world. Colonization has almost ended. Majority of the people in this world are enjoying their fundamental freedoms and human dignity. But nothing has changed in Tibet. Tibet remains a colony under China. Tibetan peoples are denied the fundamental freedoms. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who is supposed to be living in the Potala Palace in Lhasa, his own home, is still not being able to visit Tibet. And history has not been able to change despite so much of sympathy, support, outcry from the international community. So to better understand the future prospects for Tibet, let me try to share the following main points. One is the achievements of the Tibetans in the past 50 years. What have we achieved? Why have we been able to sustain the struggle for freedom despite the 50 years of difficult situation? And second, on the present status of Sino-Tibetan dialogue, what's the past efforts that we have made to engage the Chinese leaders were successful, or whether it's leading us to nowhere? And the third one is the obstacles for negotiation, why we cannot bring about any meaningful resolution of the Tibet issue despite so much of efforts in the past 20 plus years. And then I also wanted to share briefly the current prevailing situation in Tibet today. And finally, we will discuss about the hopes, why Tibetan people are still very optimistic, why His Holiness the Dalai Lama is still very optimistic, why the exiled Tibetan leadership are very much hopeful that one day we can return home and the Tibetan people inside and outside can be reunited. So in the past 50 years, despite tremendous sufferings that Tibetan people have suffered while coming to exile, we have many reasons to be proud of. We are only a handful of people when we first came into exile. As I said earlier, just 80,000 Tibetans. And you know, many of you very well know that Tibet in the past is not a developed society. We were backward in many sense, except on the spiritual development, which we have been able to preserve the Buddha's philosophy that you will nowhere find in this world other than in Tibet. But on modern terms, Tibetans were certainly a very backward society. So when China occupied Tibet in 1959, the Tibetans coming out from Tibet, it's sort of jumping from 18th century to a 20th century all of a sudden. And with so much of difficulties, we were able to, under the guidance of His Holiness the Dalai Lama and the support from the government of India, Tibetan people have established the first democratic exile government as soon as we were in India. So today, in the past 50 years, we have been enjoying all the fundamental freedoms that normally a democratic society enjoys. And we have established the three pillars of democracy, that's what we say, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary. The legislature, we have 46 members elected by the Tibetan people in diaspora. And we have the head of the executive, the prime minister of Tibetans in exile. He is being directly elected by the Tibetan diaspora, Tibetans all over the world, except, of course, Tibet. And we have also those autonomous institutions which are normally required for functioning of a democratic society. And we also have a Tibetan charter which governs the overall exiled Tibetan community. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama always say that the issue of Tibet does not fall on one individual, that is of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The Tibetan people themselves have to take the shoulder, have to take the responsibility of the Tibet issue. And now, with the direct election of the Tibetan Prime Minister in exile, His Holiness the Dalai Lama has been making publicly that now Tibetans have their own political leader. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama has almost semi-retired in terms of shouldering the major responsibilities of the Tibetan government in exile. And we always believe that democracy is one such gift that we can take it to Tibet and present it to the 6 million Tibetan people when we reunite it. And the second achievement is the preservation of Tibetan cultural identity. In fact, we are in a country where there was almost a billion people in India. And only 100,000 Tibetans, without the vision and support from the Indian government, it would not have been possible for the Tibetan community to survive, first of all in exile, then to preserve and promote our own cultural identity. And as I mentioned earlier, we have been able to establish 55-plus Tibetan refugee settlements in India, Nepal, and Bhutan. We have been able to establish exclusive Tibetan schools where we not only taught modern education, but equal emphasis were laid on Tibetan language and Tibetan cultural heritage. And today, you can find that those Tibetans who are graduated from those Tibetan schools have all the qualities of Tibetan identity. They can speak in Tibetan. They can, they have all the religious traditions that their parents have imbibed. So even similar, to myself, I was born in exile, brought up in Tibetan refugee school. And now, like myself, my generation is handling or shouldering the responsibility of the freedom struggle movement throughout the world. And the third important achievement, we believe, is the successful keeping alive the spirit of freedom struggle. As you have known that in Tibet last year, there were almost 200 plus peaceful demonstrations in Tibet, in 90 plus different areas. And almost all the participants or the protesters in these demonstrations were all youngsters, you know, below the age of 40 and 50. Those who have not experienced an independent Tibet. And similarly, those who were born and brought up in exile, the protests which were led by Students for Free Tibet, by Tibetan Youth Congress, by Tibetan associations, and by many of the youngsters, even teenagers, who have never seen their homeland, but they are determined for their struggle for freedom. So which means that we have been successfully passed over the struggle responsibilities towards our next generation. And then equally important achievement of Tibetan people is the widespread message of peace, love and compassion with the leadership of His Holiness the Dalai Lama and many other Buddhist scholars and intellectuals. We have been able to promote the human values throughout the world. And the international community support that we have been receiving over the last 50 years have been astounding. We still continue to receive so much of support from different parts of the world. As you know that we have now plus 600 Students for Free Tibet chapters around the world. We have 350 Tibet support groups. We have lots and lots of resolutions passed, both at the state legislatures and at the federal level. And we have many heads of governments taking up Tibet issue with the Chinese counterpart. So that shows that the international community's support to us is overwhelming. And particularly when, just before the Olympic Games in Beijing, when there was a torch rally across Europe and America, the support that we received was really overwhelming, and that has inspired Tibetan people both in diaspora as well as inside Tibet. So with these achievements, we have been also making efforts to resolve the issue of Tibet peacefully with the Chinese government. We have been trying to create a very conducive atmosphere so that the Chinese government will sit down and discuss the issue of Tibet seriously. His Holiness the Dalai Lama in 1988 made a proposal saying that he would not seek independence of Tibet from China. He would not seek separation of Tibet from China. And instead, he proposed a genuine autonomy status for the Tibetan people. And ever since 1988, we have been trying to reach out with the Chinese government time and again. The latest ones are, starting from 2002, we have had 8 different rounds of talks with the Chinese leaders. His Holiness the Dalai Lama's representatives went to China 8 times, brought even a memorandum calling for a genuine autonomous arrangements for the Tibetan people. Unfortunately, until today, the government of China has not responded positively to all the overtures. The government of China instead accuses His Holiness the Dalai Lama of demanding independence of Tibet. And the proposal that we have presented to them was being accused as a disguised form of independence or a semi-independence, despite the fact that the international community very well knows that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is not seeking independence of Tibet. But the Chinese government continue to accuse His Holiness and the exiled Tibetan leadership of seceding Tibet from China. the perceived obstacles to the negotiation is the preconditions that the Chinese government is making on us. They want His Holiness the Dalai Lama to declare that Tibet has always been a part of China, to which His Holiness has made it very clear that he, being a Buddhist monk, he can never tell a lie. And also, no one can rewrite our history. Let us not discuss about the past. Let the historians, the independent historians, decide on the past status of Tibet. Let's not bog down on the discussion of whether Tibet was an independent state or not in the past. But the Chinese government is still very insistent that His Holiness the Dalai Lama should recognize or declare or accept that Tibet has been a part of China. Primarily because there is a mistrust and also a suspicion that if Tibetans do not recognize Tibet being a part of China in the past, even if a resolution can be found in the near future, then they believe that the door to independence will remain open forever, because they have not yet decided on the dispute of whether Tibet was an independent state or not. But His Holiness and the exiled Tibetan leadership has made it very clear that we are very sincere that once Tibetans gains an autonomous status, we will not seek or we will not demand independence of Tibet. But nevertheless, with this mistrust and suspicion, it has become a stumbling block to the future dialogue of Tibet and China. And second issue is the territorial integrity of China. We Tibetans say that since we have accepted to remain in association with China, the territorial integrity of China is not being questioned at all. It is intact. But at the same time, what we demand is that the Tibetan people, the autonomy that we are demanding is for the Tibetan people, not to the Tibet Autonomous Region area alone. Because when China defines Tibet, they define only the Tibet Autonomous Region. And half of the Tibetan population live outside the Tibet Autonomous Region. For example, myself. My parents were born outside Tibet Autonomous Region in Kham province. Similarly, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is from Amdo region, Amdo province of Tibet, which is not under the Tibet Autonomous Region area. So since we are not demanding independence of Tibet, what we sincerely requesting is the creating a single administrative entity where all the 6 million Tibetan people can enjoy the same policies that can ensure the preservation of Tibetan cultural identity. And so far, the Chinese government again has been accusing His Holiness by saying that you are demanding 1/4 of the Chinese territory. But whereas we are not. As I mentioned, the 6 million Tibetan people is recognized by the Chinese government as one nationality out of the 56. And since the Chinese government recognized Tibetans as one nationality, and also the government of China has established different autonomous status to different Tibetan inhabited areas. For example, like we have one Tibet Autonomous Region, we have 8 Tibetan autonomous prefectures, we have 2 Tibet autonomous counties. So we are saying that why we need so much of different autonomous status in entities. Let's all combine them together so that the Tibetan people can enjoy the same rights, same freedom as Tibetans in central Tibet enjoys, all the Tibetans who are in eastern and northeastern Tibetan areas can enjoy. So this is another stumbling block which the Chinese government is not trying to consider. And but nevertheless, what we say that the demand of the Tibetan people are very legitimate, and also if the Chinese government has the will to resolve the issue of Tibet, if they have the political will to resolve the issue of Tibet, I think the problem of Tibet can be sorted out in a few days' time. So far, with the hardline policies of the Chinese leaders, and particularly because there are a number of ultra-leftist communist leaders who still has, yields quite a lot of power in Beijing, those reform-minded Chinese leaders' voices are not being heard strongly these days. And with this heartland policies of the Chinese government, Tibetan people inside Tibet are really having a hard time. And perhaps in the past 50 years, except during the Cultural Revolution time, Tibetans are experiencing the worst kind of repression today in Tibet. But on the contrary, very recently the Chinese government announced that Tibet is a paradise on earth. And then we ask them, if it is a paradise, why there is a need of heavy military presence in all the Tibetan areas? Why, March 2008, 200 different peaceful protests took place in almost all major towns and cities in Tibet? Why Tibetan people are so resentful against the Chinese authorities? Why every year 3,000 Tibetan refugees escape from Tibet to seek refuge in India and Nepal? Many of them including young children. The Chinese government has no answer to this. But we say that the strong military presence in Tibet it shows that the Chinese policies in Tibet has failed miserably. If the past 50 years Chinese policies in Tibet have been beneficial to the Tibetan people, the situation would not be as it is today. And even His Holiness has said in his 10 March statement that Tibet today is like a huge prison where Tibetans are always looked upon as criminals. So this is the pathetic situation of Tibet today. And there certainly is lack of religious freedoms. Since 1994, the Chinese government came up with a campaign called Work Teams to re-educate, to provide patriotic re-education to monks and nuns and to other lay Tibetan peoples. And even today, these Work Team officials continue to live in different monastic institutions, forcing the monks and nuns to learn socialism, forcing the nuns and monks to sign 5-point pledges, and one of them is to denounce their own religious spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama. And obviously you know that many of the monks and nuns refuse to obey to the demands of the Chinese leaders, and the result is torture, arrest, and imprisonment. And just yesterday, day before yesterday, the government of Tibetans in exile has released a video showing the torture that Tibetan people are undergoing today in Tibet. And this video, I was told, I have not seen it yet, it was released yesterday, if you can, if you are interested to see, it's in tibet.net, www.tibet.net. So in that video, you will see, it's very graphic, I was told, and the young children are not recommended to watch that TV. And the torture that Tibetan people have, you know, suffered, it's really unthinkable, despite the fact that the Chinese government signed and ratified the Convention Against Torture. In fact, the Chinese government, you know, signed almost all the international human rights treaties, except that they have not ratified the International Convention of Civil and Political Rights. Otherwise, they claim that they abide by the international rules and regulations. But unfortunately, the situation in Tibet is a strong evidence that China is not fulfilling its international responsibilities. Having said that, many of you might think that, you know, how hard the Chinese leaders are and how impossible it seems to resolve the issue of Tibet. But the Tibetan people always remain optimistic, partially because, being a Buddhist, we strongly believe that nothing is permanent. And we have also witnessed major changes in China in the past 50 years. China is still changing, and China definitely will change in the future. The present Chinese leaders who are holding power in Beijing today will not remain forever in Beijing. And most importantly, the communist regime in China is facing an existential problem that normally, you know, the liberal systems or democratic societies do not face. The debate of democracy is still going on. Many of us have witnessed 1981 Great Wall democracy movement, 1989 Tiananmen Square students movement, where thousands of Chinese students were killed. And now there's a new rigorous campaign going on within China, in mainland China. I don't know whether you have heard of a document called Charter 2008. Charter 2008 was a campaign launched on 10th of December 2008 on the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And when that campaign was launched, it was initially supported by 300 Chinese citizens, mostly intellectuals, scholars, lawyers, former party members. And now this document is being widely circulated inside China. And today, there are plus 8,000 Chinese who have signed the document. And I always try to remind that, even though the number 8,000 really doesn't sound much, given the fact that China has 1 billion population. But those who signed the document, they are risking their freedom, that they are risking their lives. And I also share a very interesting story of a young girl who normally was never involved in any political activities, but she is an internet savvy. She really, writes her personal views in her own blogs. Then she also received the Charter 2008 document from a friend. She read it once, and she ignored it. As I said, she is not really interested in political issues, out of fear that if she engages in political activities, then, you know, her freedom might be at risk. But after 3 months, she signed the document and publicly declared her support for Charter 2008. And when she declared her support, she wrote saying that she signed that document hundreds of times in her mind. So there are thousands and thousands of such young Chinese people who believe that China should change, that a reform should be brought in China. And this Charter 2008 demands a political reform, a multi-party system, and a free election in China. But obviously, the Chinese government is not interested in doing so. In the contrary, they are trying to incite nationalistic attitudes, sentiments, fervor in amongst the young Chinese youths, because they believe that if their own citizens have a strong nationalistic view, then they can consolidate their domestic power and the support for the Communist Party will remain stronger forever. So, nevertheless, as I said, more and more Chinese people are coming out openly to demand for a change in Chinese political system. And also, the support that the Chinese government, the Chinese people extending to the Tibetan people's cause is also astounding. You know, in March 2008, when there were lots of arrests and torture going on in Tibet, more than 700 Chinese intellectuals signed a document supporting the cause of Tibetan people. They are all from mainland China, not outside China. And when thousands of Tibetans were arrested and imprisoned, and a dozen of Chinese lawyers came out in support of those Tibetans arrested, saying that they will fight the case of those arrested Tibetans. Obviously, the Chinese government will never let them do. And today, it is the top priority of the Tibetan people in exile. It is the top priority of His Holiness the Dalai Lama to reach out to the Chinese community as much as possible. Primarily because the Beijing leadership is trying to create hatred among Tibetans and Chinese peoples. Probably many of you might have seen that initially on March 14, when there was a demonstration in Tibet, few protesters tried to harm some Chinese civilians in Lhasa. And that video footage was shown time and again throughout China, trying to show that, look here, Tibetan people are anti-Chinese people. And because of this, the ethnic animosity, ethnic hatred is being generated intentionally by the Chinese government. So in order to reach out to the Chinese community, in order to strengthen our understanding, in order to create greater awareness on the Tibetan situation or the aspirations of the Tibetan people to the Chinese people, we are trying to reach out to the Chinese people as much as possible. And we have also established Chinese Tibetan friendship societies in some parts of the world, in Japan, in Australia, in the United States. Now we are creating one in Canada also, but not only one in the United States. For instance, we have established one in Washington, D.C., another in New York City. Now we have established another in Boston, in Los Angeles, and gradually, if we can establish more and more Chinese Tibetan friendship societies, we will be able to strengthen our friendship. And after all, Chinese and Tibetan peoples have to live together until the world exists. And what we are confident or proud of is, on March the 10th this year, when Tibetan people were commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Tibetan National Uprising Day, for the first time ever, Chinese organizations, overseas Chinese organizations, organized a function on March the 10th to support the Tibetan people, to express their solidarity to the Tibetan people. So this is the first ever time that such an expression of solidarity is being shown by the Chinese people. And there were several Chinese speakers at the time. I was also there. And one of the Chinese speakers stated that in early 80s, they even hesitate to share to other Chinese colleagues, saying that he or she has an interest to have an audience with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Now in these 20 years, things have changed tremendously. Now the Chinese people proudly, you know, inform their colleagues and peers and relatives that they have met with His Holiness. And they can now proudly, even openly in the public function, they can express their support for the Tibetan people. And even the Chinese, many Chinese, you know, dissidents, many Chinese scholars have said that when they were in China, they really believe that Dalai Lama is an evil person because of so much of propaganda machinery from Chinese official media. They believe that their government is, you know, telling the truth. But once they are outside China, they realize that everything their own government is telling is a lie. That their own government is fooling their own citizens. And the truth is something different from what the Chinese Communist government tried to convey. So, with the international community support, with the support, the increasing support from the Chinese community, and also the determination of Tibetan people inside and outside Tibet. As I said, since last year, Tibetan people have shown it to the world that we can stand up against injustices of the Chinese government, despite the fact that hundreds of Tibetans were shot dead during those peaceful demonstrations. Over 1,000 Tibetans have disappeared, rather, and their whereabouts are still not known. Over 2,000 are still incarcerated in various Chinese prisons in Tibet. But still, Tibetan people are very determined to fight for their cause. And this year, in February, some of you might have heard that the Tibetan people inside and outside Tibet boycotted our own New Year. Tibetan New Year is considered the most important holiday season as for Christian Christmas. But this year, Tibetan people inside and outside Tibet boycotted that holiday season of Tibetan New Year. And the Chinese government were forcing the Tibetans, those who are working in government offices, to celebrate Tibetan New Year. Tibetan families were given money to buy new clothes. And since every year on the New Year, the Tibetans normally change their door curtain, put up a new prayer flags on the rooftops, but this year no one really did that. And the Chinese security forces were asking, why have you not changed the door curtain this year? Why there is no national prayer flags up on the top of your roofs? And they have made it a political condition to many of those Tibetan families who are serving in different offices, in different schools, in hospitals, that if you do not celebrate Losar, then you will see that you are against the Chinese government. So the resentments of Tibetan people against Chinese authorities are very, very strong, and Tibetan people are very, very determined to further carry out their struggle for justice and freedom. And one of my acquaintances told me that Tibetans inside AMDO, even though they are very illiterate, they are just farmers, they really doesn't know anything, but they are also determined. According to him, the Tibetan people have lost fears now. They really no longer feel fear. They are ready to sacrifice their own lives. So under such circumstances, the Chinese authorities will certainly have to review their existing policies on Tibet. So at the same time, as I said, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is making efforts. He really do not want any harms to the Chinese people. He is coming up with, he comes up with conciliatory approaches, for the beneficials of both the Chinese and Tibetan people. And hopefully, in the years to come, when the new leaders takes over China, and when more and more Chinese people comes to know about the true aspirations of the Tibetan people, there will be a day Tibet Tibetans can return to their free homeland. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Lobsang Yondak, the Dalai Lama's representative to the United States, recorded at the Alaska World Affairs Council in Anchorage on Friday, March 20th. To link to any of the websites Lobsang mentioned in his speech, go to our website, kska.org. Following his talk on the future prospects for Tibet, Lobsang responded to two questions from the audience. First, he was asked, why is China so determined to stay in Tibet? Is there a wealth of natural resources that we don't know about?
There certainly are lots of reasons why China still wants to cut in their hold on Tibet. In the past, it used to be called Tibet is a very strategic military area. But today it might not be because of so much of advanced nuclear weapons around the world. But one thing is that Tibet still has lots of natural resources. And most importantly, the water resources is the most, I think, important resources in this world. One Indian strategist has written, saying that in the past, the war is being fought for territories. And today, the war is being fought on energies. And tomorrow, the war will be fought for water. And Tibet is the world's probably one of the biggest water reservoirs.
There is a fair amount of mystery surrounding how the Dalai Lama and his predecessors have been selected, another audience member stated. Can you please shed some light on the selection process?
Thank you very much for asking this question. This is one of the most important, I think, questions or the issues that are of concern for the Tibetan people and for all the other supporters and followers of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. If you have read Tibetan history, during the absence of the Dalai Lamas, Tibet had the most difficult periods during the regency time. We have had lots of conflicts, lots of internal, power conflicts, power struggle, and we really don't want to repeat that same mistake. So even though His Holiness has tried very hard to groom political leadership amongst the Tibetans themselves, but still, his leadership is so overwhelming and charismatic that not only the Tibetan people but the entire world, respects and his institution. So, in order to not to have the same vacuum as we had in the past, absence of the Dalai Lamas, His Holiness himself has proposed several times to the Tibetan people that we should now consider recognizing the next Dalai Lama. And one of the options could be to select or elect the Dalai Lama, similar to that of the Pope, or to recognize the 15th Dalai Lama during the lifetime of the present Dalai Lama. It's a matter of belief. And, Tibetan Buddhists, we believe in different forms of manifestations. And there are cases in our, present generation that one of His Holiness' tutors, he was recognized during the lifetime of his own teacher. So in that way, we can also have a similar sort of system of recognizing a young boy as the next Dalai Lama when the present Dalai Lama is still in power. Or there is another option who says that maybe His Holiness the present Dalai Lama can predict that his one of his manifestations will be born on such and such date in such and such family or location. So if that can be done, and if that boy or a girl, probably a boy, takes birth, then he can be groomed as the 15th Dalai Lama, when the present Dalai Lama is still alive. So in that way, we can gradually build the credibility of the next Dalai Lama, you know, during the presence of the 14th Dalai Lama. So these are all debates and considerations. So, you know, we haven't yet made any sort of decision so far. And this is certainly a very crucial, you know, for the Japan people to make a decision how we should be going about to recognize the next Dalai Lama.
This concludes Alaska World Affairs Council Presents Lobsang Yandak, the Dalai Lama's representative to the United States. Recorded in Anchorage on Friday, March 20th, Lobsang responded to questions from the audience following his talk on the future prospects for Tibet. To find additional information on Tibet in exile or to link to any of the websites Lobsang referred to in his speech, go to kska.org and click on AWAC Presents at the bottom of the page. These broadcasts are produced by KSKA Public Radio in partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council. Visit kska.org to sign up for free podcasts of Alaska World Affairs Council Presents. You can also sign up for email updates about the show and share your comments with us and other listeners online at kska.org. This has been a presentation of KSKA in partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.